Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you like Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Most of us take for granted that our heart beats about 100,000 times per day. But what happens when something goes wrong? In the most severe cases of heart disease, a patient may require a heart transplant, but even more rare is a heart-lung transplant, and only about 100 Americans receive that every year. Joining us is Courtney Zableski. She's the recipient of a new heart and lung from the UW Heart Transplant Center, and there have only been 17 such procedures since 1989. And Courtney, you are also the 1,000th patient to receive a heart from UW.
Yes.
How old are you, Courtney?
I just turned 31.
Were you always a pretty active person?
Yeah, I was in every sport possible except for volleyball growing up. And then I had my kid and he was in every sport, so I helped him practice. So I've been active my entire life. I'm a huge hiker and always outdoors.
And he's 10 years old, so I would imagine he's an active kid.
Extremely, yeah.
Now, when did you start to feel as if something were wrong?
In high school, my chest would get tight all the time and I just kind of shrugged it off. When it became unmanageable, I was running cross country and my parents brought me to the doctor and they told me I had exercise-induced asthma. And I was just diagnosed with that for 4 years and turns out it was wrong. My dad passed away when I was 18 and in their autopsy, they
found... Now wait, how old was your dad?
My dad was 42.
So he was young.
Very.
And what did he die from?
Cardiac arrest.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was in the hospital twice prior to that with acute heart attacks, and they just kind of shrugged it off, told him to take aspirin, and sent him home. So he quit smoking, got super active, started eating really healthy, and it was a year later, almost to the day, that he died of cardiac arrest.
And what did they find in that autopsy?
Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So most hearts weigh roughly 300 grams. His was 760 grams.
Twice the size?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What causes that?
The lining of your heart gets larger, which makes like the holes that store the blood inside smaller and it becomes more tough. So like it's harder to pump the blood throughout your body.
So with your father's heart history, didn't they take a closer look at you?
I had to fight. So after he passed away, the autopsy, I went back to a cardiologist and they ran the test and pretty much went, yep, you have it. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. But they went, no big deal. Sent me on my way.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, how frequent do people have that particular condition?
It's becoming more common now to get diagnosed, but it's still very rare. And usually when you're diagnosed, it's obstructive. So like it's in your arteries with plaque usually, and they give you meds to control it. In our case, because it is genetic, there's no meds. It's not obstructive. So nothing's in your arteries. There's nothing they can do to treat it or cure it, or you just kind of go on about your day.
Now, you said they just sent you away. I mean, did you have medication that you were taking or?
They tried, it's called metoprolol, which is a beta blocker for most heart conditions. And they went, this might help, probably not, but give it a try. It didn't affect me positive or negatively.
So what's your state of mind at this point?
I mean, science is crazy. There's always things developing. So, I mean, I think eventually they'll find something. But for now, it's just kind of a
When they gave you that diagnosis.
I've always had the mindset that once my time, it's my time. So I just kind of took it and just rolled with it. It wasn't a big part of my life. I didn't care.
Did you change your activities or anything?
No.
So you were still very active at this point?
Yeah. If anything, I became more active. I went out to go do more things because with my dad dying so young, and most of my family has gone young, just he's the only one with an autopsy, so I just kind of already had the assumption I wasn't going to make it past 40. So when I had that diagnosis, I was like, okay, we're going to do everything I want to do right now. So I just have been go, go, go since I was 18.
Did you do things that would have been considered radical by other people? I mean, did you jump out of planes and things like that?
My dad was a skydiver, so I absolutely went.
Okay, your dad was a skydiver, so you...
I absolutely went skydiving, yes. Before I actually listed for a transplant, before I started really declining, I was looking at getting my license to skydive. I've only tandem before. So I'd only jump with somebody else. And my goal was to jump alone. So yes, I absolutely went skydiving.
And what other things did you do?
I wouldn't even consider skydiving crazy in my
brain.
You
don't think that's reckless?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right. Okay. So you're just going to live your life because you know there's a stop clock on that.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone has a stop clock. But yeah, mine's just a little bit sooner. So
when did you really start to have problems, though? With this kind of active lifestyle?
So when I got pregnant with my son, I was 20. And pregnancy was great. Nothing wrong. When I went into labor, though, 7 weeks early. I didn't know it at the time. But apparently when you have that heart condition, you can't go full term. Your body just won't let you. And same kind of deal, though. I went into the hospital. I had a lot of complications during labor. And immediately after, I was in the hospital longer than he was because my heart backed up with fluid. But it cleared and they went, okay, bye. Didn't tell me I couldn't have more kids, had no idea. Yeah, they just, again, shrugged it off.
That was the first wake-up call that there's something more to this.
Yeah, it was really scary.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I saw 6 doctors in a matter of 2 weeks, pretty much every single one of them going, if you go through fully with your pregnancy, you are not going to be here anymore, and there's a chance your daughter won't be either.
Heart-lung transplant recipient Courtney Zablewski has to make a devastating decision.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Courtney Zablewski, the recipient of a new heart and lung from the UW Heart Transplant Center.
So now you're like 26, 27 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start to notice anything else where maybe you couldn't do the things you once did?
Should I have done the things? No. Did I? Yes. So like my chest would get really tight and I would get constant palpitations and like it would hurt. But again, there's no treatment and there's no cure that you just push through it. Because what else are you? I'm not going to sit on a couch all day. I'm not going to play the pity party. So I just kept doing them and dealt with it, which is probably not. But
did you realize it was your heart?
Yeah.
So you knew?
Yes.
And you just powered through?
Yep.
What did the doctor say? Or were you even seeing a doctor regularly?
They just told me essentially that I needed to get a checkup every 2 years. So it was a variety of tests every 2 years, and they would just document the progress.
So when did you realize this is bigger than just living with it?
In 2023, so my husband and I had just gotten divorced. I was pregnant with my next child, and my OB had wanted me to get an echo to like make sure my heart was okay because of the complications during labor with my son. And I got my echo, and he's a phenomenal cardiologist, but he sent me in for my first ever like invasive procedure that I hadn't had done before to check.
What was it?
That's a right heart catheterization. And because I had documented that I had pulmonary hypertension, which is affected by a heart condition, but it's in the arteries of your lungs. And we had this procedure. The doctor stopped it early and was like, I don't feel because I was pregnant. He's like, I don't feel comfortable going further. This is really bad. I'm calling your cardiologist right now and he will talk to you while you're here. And I was like, okay. So my cardiologist went, your case is too advanced for me. I cannot give you the care that you need, and refer me down to UW-Madison. So I saw 6 doctors in a matter of 2 weeks, pretty much every single one of them going, if you go through fully with your pregnancy, you are not going to be here anymore, and there's a chance your daughter won't be either. That was like my really big wake-up call that I couldn't do everything that I wanted to do anymore.
You had just gotten married.
Yep.
And you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And now you know that they're telling you, if you go through with this pregnancy, you're not going to make it.
Yep.
What did you do at that point?
That was hard. It was a very wanted pregnancy that, like, my son was super excited for. My husband, I was super excited for. He was excited for. So, like I said, we went with 6 doctors. I was kind of just hoping that one of them would tell me something different, that, like, the other ones were all wrong. And that was not the case. So Wisconsin also has the abortion ban, regardless if it's a danger to mother's life. Doesn't matter. So Madison had to send me to Minnesota and to essentially terminated pregnancy, and came back and I got met with a heart failure cardiologist who also specializes in transplant at UW. And we kind of just monitored because transplant was still not a topic of conversation. So I followed with him for about a year and a half. And I was doing a bunch of like holistic things because, again, there's no treatment, no cure. So I was doing like beetroots and tart cherries and like things that you wouldn't think are good, like extra good, but it's Chinese medicine, which is just as good as Western medicine, just in a different sense. And then I was also doing like acupuncture and massage and chiropractic and all these things. And it was making it so I was feeling a lot better to do things again. And like I was looking better on the outside. So my cardiologist had me do a repeat heart catheterization because he's like, yeah, I think you're doing better. I think we might be on the right, like your method might be on the right track. Because even he thought I was doing, like my jugular vein in your neck looked better. And so I did the heart catheterization and turns out I was declining really fast.
Were they looking at, what is it that they monitor? It's the ejection heart factor?
So, yep, the ejection fraction is part of it, which mine has actually always been phenomenal. That never changed. So 60 to 70% is perfect, and mine has always been 65. The measurement of my septum, so between your ventricles and your heart, was thickened, and it didn't squeeze very well. And then my pulmonary pressure, so the artery from your heart to your lungs, should be under 30. 30 is severe. So it's like, I think it's under 15 is normal, and then 15 to 30 is like mild and moderate, and then above 30 is severe. Mine was averaged at 86.
86?
Yes. So like, my doctors were even like, we don't know how you're not on oxygen. We don't know how you're walking. And I was like, because I have to. So no idea how. It was really bad. So it was right after that that he's like, I think we should talk about a transplant.
Your reaction when you heard you need a heart transplant?
I told him no. I didn't want it. I think organ donation is great. And I always have. I've always been an organ donor. But in the receiving end, I was like, I don't want to have in the back of my mind that, like, I almost felt like I was relying on someone else's death for me to live, and that just didn't feel right. And it took me a while to process that, like, that's not what you're wishing for. But yeah, so I told him no. I didn't want it.
What was the reaction?
He argued with me. He eventually got my husband and my son to convince me that I really needed it. But I also had a defibrillator put in, which I hated. You could feel it. And so when I was leaning towards like maybe getting the transplant, I talked with a bunch of surgeons, the whole transplant team, and I requested a secondary appointment with a surgeon that I hadn't met yet, who is by far my favorite surgeon ever in the entire world. I was like, I'll do the transplant if you take out my defibrillator. And he said, yeah, we can do it as a separate surgery later on. And I said, nope, either you do it at the time of transplant or I don't want it.
Had your defibrillator ever gone off?
No. But I was so afraid of it going off. And it also, it was in the side of my ribs. It was not above my heart. So it was also in a weird spot. So I couldn't like put pressure on my side. Otherwise it would just, it didn't hurt, but it was such an uncomfortable feeling that I hated it. So like that was kind of my agreeance to get a transplant was if they would take that out.
So did they take it out right away?
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
How long from the time that they told you you need a transplant till you got it was there?
86 days.
Did they tell you at the time you were also going to need a lung transplant?
Yes. It was not, they would not list me if I could not be approved for both.
What did they tell you the odds were of, first of all, a heart lung that would match you being available?
Not very high. So everyone has antibodies that will reject organs, and they're usually under, I think it's like 40%. Mine were above 60. So getting a match itself is hard. And then also it has to be someone that's about my age-ish and my same body build, same chest size, same weight. So all of those things having to line up.
And by the way, you're kind of petite.
Yeah. I'm right now I'm 140, just under 140.
But you're small.
And I'm 5'2". So like I'm not a big person. Like I'm short, I'm little, I'm getting a match was not like super likely. And if it was, they were like, it's probably gonna be closer to a year because I needed both. And the way that list is kind of strange also. It follows the heart, not the lungs. And my lungs were what was like really bad, oddly enough.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Once you're listed, that's your confirmation in your head that you know you're really dying.
Heart lung transplant recipient Courtney Zabluski talks about the anxiety of waiting for an organ donation.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with heart-lung transplant recipient, Courtney Savluski. What was the waiting period like?
Unnerving. Once you're listed, like, that's your confirmation in your head that you know you're really dying. So,
did you know how many other people were listed at that time? At UW?
For a heart-lung?
Yes.
I was the only one.
So you knew if it came through, you were going to get it?
Kind of.
What do you mean, kind of?
So it's usually by region. So like all of the Midwest. Mine, however, came from Texas. So it wasn't even in our area.
What were the instructions you were given when you were told you are first on the list for heart-lung transplant?
Well, so it follows the heart. So it doesn't really follow both organs. And as a heart, I was a status 4 out of 6, which is pretty low on the list. And they had to also find the lungs that matched with the heart. So like the likelihood of both of them together, they were like 6 months, a year, hopefully, maybe. And just kind of like a crossing fingers type of deal. Like no one really thought I was going to get it soon, if at all.
Did they tell you what your mortality was at that point?
No. When I asked, I was quoted, "We don't give cancer statistics." And I was like, that's a pretty crappy thing to say. I remember that exact phrase because it stuck out so much. Because they can't give, like, they didn't know.
That had to be really stressful on you and your son and your husband.
Extremely. I guess, prepped my son especially to what it was going to be like when he didn't have a mom anymore. Because we did not think I was going to be here. Whether it be at the transplant or not. Like, even if I made it to the transplant, I was fully prepared to not make it out of the hospital. The mortality rate for a heart lung once you get the transplant also isn't great because there hasn't been very many done. So they are learning with every single transplant.
What is the current mortality rate?
I believe it's 66%.
So you knew, even if you got it. Mm-hmm. So 86 days.
Yeah, 86. I documented every single day.
How did you document it?
I started a TikTok, and I was going to do a podcast, and I was like, that seems too much. I don't feel like doing that. So I just started a TikTok. And yeah, I was just doing everyday updates of like, this is what I'm doing today. Today's day XYZ.
Did you have a lot of people following you?
Just under 4,000. So, I mean,
That's a good amount. That's a lot. All right. So every day you're waiting. What was the day that changed your life?
January 1st, 2025.
What happened?
So my son's birthday is New Year's Eve. He had a lock-in at a VR place overnight. I picked him up on the 1st at 8 o'clock in the morning, drove 40 minutes home. He fell asleep on the couch because he was up all night for a lock-in. I sat down next to him. At 9:15, I got the call in the morning that they had organs for me and to be at the hospital by noon.
What happened? I mean, that's less than 3 hours. You had to get ready, get to the hospital. It must have been somewhat frantic.
So when you're on the list, you have a go bag in your vehicle at all times because you could be called whenever and you might not be home. So I had the go bag ready, but obviously I still have my son too and my animals at home. So like I had about 45 minutes to get everything situated, make the calls I needed to make. And then my husband and I be on the road to the hospital because we live 2 hours away.
What happened when you got to the hospital?
A lot of hurry up and wait at first. So had to check in, just like a regular surgery almost. And you get prepped-ish. They really just start with an IV and medications and like take a bunch of blood every 2 hours. And you just hang out and wait until they tell you that it's time to get ready for surgery.
How many hours between the time you arrived at the hospital and they took you into the OR?
I got my last meal at 6 o'clock. They told me to try to sleep and I was pulled down for prep at 2 a.m. So 14 hours and roughly.
How long did they tell you the surgery would be?
Between 6 and I think they said it could be as long as 18.
18 hours.
Could be. Mine, I believe, was like 8.
How many medical professionals were working on you during those 8 hours?
For sure that I know of, I had 3 organ surgeons. And then I also had a team that took out the defibrillator. So for sure, at least 4, plus my anesthesiologist, so 5.
And I would assume a lot of support people.
I would imagine so.
But you're out.
Oh, yeah.
You know nothing.
Yeah, no, I have no recollection.
What was the last thing you said to your husband before you went in?
That I loved him. What was that? Just that I loved him.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I was on a lot of pain meds. I remember being in a lot of pain, but that's really about it. And it was like 2 days after that I went into rejection and double pneumonia.
Heart-lung transplant recipient Courtney Zalewski talks about her body rejecting that organ donation.
Now more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Courtney Zalewski, who is only the 17th person to receive a heart-lung transplant from UW since 1989.
They pulled me down originally for prep, and that's the first time it ever really, really hit me that I was doing this, that I had my first ever panic attack. The nurse came in and kind of was like, what just happened? She called my surgeon, and he's like, well, where's your husband? And I was like, they didn't say he'd come down here. They're like, oh, he's like, yeah, we can go get him. I'm like, okay. So I went and pulled him down. It was only like 20 minutes that he was able to come and stay with me. But yeah, he gave me a kiss and said, I love you. And I said, I'll see you on the other side. I didn't know if that meant after surgery or if that meant the other side of life. But yeah, I said that as well.
So 8 hours went by.
Mm-hmm.
Flurry of activity, I'm sure, in the surgical room. What do you remember from when you first woke up?
Honestly, not a whole lot from when I first woke up the first time. I was on a lot of pain meds. I remember being in a lot of pain, but that's really about it. I know things that I was told that happened when I first woke up, but not that I actually remember.
Now, you said that was the first time you woke up.
Yeah. I was supposed to be discharged a week and a half after surgery, which is absurd to me, but apparently I was doing really well. Again, don't remember it. And it was like 2 days after that I went into rejection and double pneumonia, and they had to reintubate me and put me back into a medically induced coma.
How long were you in that?
3 days, I believe.
So now it's been how many days since your surgery?
They took me out of the coma on January 15th because my best friend was staying with me and it was her birthday. So January 15th.
So had you gone home between?
No, I was still in the hospital.
You were still in the hospital. So now it's been over 2 weeks you're in the hospital.
Yep. And most lung transplants are usually 3 months in the hospital. Yeah.
So when you woke up that second time, mm-hmm. What did you think?
My chest hurt. I guess they had to give me a second nerve block at some point. I could feel how much, like, just pain, because they cut your sternum in half. So my chest hurt a lot, but I didn't have fluid on me anymore. So, like, before my transplant, I had, because when you're in heart failure, you retain fluid in your body. And I had, it was like 25 pounds of fluid. So I woke up the second time, and it wasn't there. So I was in pain, but my body felt lighter and better. I stood up almost immediately. I went for a walk right away with a walker and a chair behind me. But I went for a walk in the hallway. So I was in pain, but I felt good.
What was the recovery period like for you while you were still in the hospital?
So I was only there for 23 days.
When most people are there for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I pushed myself really hard. I wanted to get home to my kid. So I did everything I possibly could. I remember I woke up with a feeding tube the second time, well, both times, but the second time they told me they were not going to pull it until I ate the calories I needed, because the first time around I didn't have enough calories, because in case you didn't know, hospital food sucks. So I was eating and I was like, how many protein shakes do I need to drink to go home? So we were giving and taking to get me out sooner. I also had to walk a lot, though, so I had to do 4 walks a day, which sound easy-ish, because you're just walking around the nurse's station. When you're telling your body how to walk again, twice, because I was reintubated, you lose all of your muscle in that hospital bed. So it's hard, and it takes a lot of motivation. And thank God my husband and my best friend were there, because I wanted to give up almost every other day. I just didn't want to do it. It's so hard. It's mentally taxing, and like your body is just, it doesn't know what to do anymore.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I still do risky behaviors. Don't tell my team that.
Why?
But skydiving, I haven't gone yet, but it is in the works.
You plan on going skydiving?
Absolutely.
Soon?
Hopefully, yeah.
Courtney Zablewski says getting a new heart and lung isn't going to change one of her very surprising recreational activities.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with Courtney Zablewski. I'm your host, Libby Collins. You said that you just wanted to give up. Mm-hmm. Did you really want to give up?
Yes. People that need transplants need them because they're so sick that it's the only thing that's going to keep them alive. But once you get that transplant, you need every ounce of motivation to stay alive. It was really hard. You are so mentally and physically exhausted, and you're on so many meds that make you feel like you're going crazy. I mean, I'm still on steroids, like steroids themselves, but then just all of them. And like, you go from not taking meds or taking less meds to 26 pills in the morning. It's a lot.
When did things start to change for you? Where you started to feel stronger? Where you thought, I can do this?
The day I got rid of my walker, I was out of the hospital. I was staying at my brother's house in Madison, and I couldn't even get off the couch, if to put it in perspective. I had to have one of my brothers literally put an arm underneath me to like give me a boost up, because I could not stand up by myself. I could walk with my walker, and I could move, but I couldn't physically get off of the couch. And so my older brother came over to help me. I was like, no, I really want to try by myself. And I did, and he's like, grabbed my walker, and I was like, nope, I don't want it. Just walk to the bathroom. And so, like, that was my, like, oh, I can do this.
And how many days after the surgery was that?
That was roughly, I want to say it was, like, February 20th, because it was right after Valentine's Day.
So you're about 6.5 weeks.
Yes.
Past the surgery. What did your doctors say to you at that time?
They just said I was doing great. I think they told me I was doing great all the time. Everyone's been so amazed by my recovery since day one, which is crazy.
When did you start to think about the person from whom you received the heart and lung?
The second I got the call. But I had a breakdown before I had my transplant about the donor.
What do you mean a breakdown?
Sad that someone else lost their life. I know it happens every day and all of us have an end. But knowing that you're going to have someone else's organs and that they aren't here anymore, and it like really weighs on you, that you're not going to be you anymore either. I mean, you're still you, but you have someone else's parts. And it's just a very strange and like mental hurdle to get over.
During your recovery, did that haunt you?
Haunt me? No. It almost gave me like extra oomph, I guess.
What did you find out about the person who gave you this gift?
I don't know how much I can share. I mean, I could share all of it, I guess. We've written back and forth so far, her mother and I.
It was a girl.
Yep. And just because she hasn't given me like full permission, I just gave her permission to share my stuff, but she hasn't done the vice versa. But she's from Texas. She's younger than me and is just like an incredible human being based on what her mom wrote. So that...
And I assume this was from an accident.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in a car accident.
When did you decide to reach out to her parents?
The second the hospital would let me. I wrote a letter.
And did you get a response immediately?
Pretty fast, yeah. Which I wasn't expecting. Because when I wrote my letter, I wrote it very vague because I tried putting myself in their shoes. If something were to happen to my son, he would absolutely be an organ donor. But I would not want to know who that person is. Like, I'm so glad they're alive, but I don't want to meet you because nothing would bring my kid back.
Have you seen photos of this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you talked to her mom?
Only through letters so far.
Do you want to meet her?
If she'd be up for it, absolutely. In the letter that I just wrote back to her, she asked if she could share my things. And I was like, I am quite literally only alive because of your daughter. So whatever will keep her memory alive and gives you guys comfort, I will be more than happy to do. So if she wanted to meet me, I would in a heartbeat.
How has your life changed since you've gone through all of this? Because I'm sitting across from you. I know before we came into the studio, I said, do you need to take the elevator to the studio? Or can you walk down those steps? If I didn't know and I looked at you, I'd say, she's a young lady who's obviously very active and there's nothing wrong with her.
That's funny. That's actually the exact same thing my surgeon said. They were like, if we didn't do your surgery, we'd have no idea you had one. It's been great. I raced my kid across a field. I haven't been able
to... Who won?
The first time he did because I fell. there was a hole I didn't realize, and I got a giant bruise on my knee. The second time, though, I won. I gave him a piggyback ride the other day because we were recreating a picture from when he was a baby. My husband and I go for walks, and he jokes, and he'll grab his chest, and he'll go, I need a transplant, I think, because I'm just so much faster than him. If I didn't have all, like, the mental part of the transplant and the obvious scar that's very visible, it doesn't even feel like I had one. So I just feel healthy.
Do you feel like the same person as you did before the surgery?
Yeah. I mean, maybe a little more grateful than I was. I still do risky behaviors. Don't tell my team that.
Like?
I mean, skydiving. And I haven't gone yet, but it is in the works.
You plan on going skydiving?
Absolutely.
Soon?
Hopefully, yeah. I want to go before winter. So my team told me to please weigh your risks. That to me isn't, like we just talked about earlier, is not risky.
What do your husband, your mom, your son say about you wanting to go back and jump out of a plane?
My son thinks it's awesome. He wants to fly the planes. So I'm not allowed to jump out of the plane that he flies, though. He made that very clear. My husband is very content on the ground. He will not step foot in a plane to jump out of it. My mom was married to my dad. So, I mean, to her, that's nothing. She doesn't skydive. She's also terrified of heights. But my dad did it all the time. He was a well-known guy at the drop zone. So it's normal for us.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
There's a lot of people that are afraid of organization, and I just think it's really important. So I think that still that purpose, that needing to push people to where they belong, whether it be to donate their organs or also to like show people that they can make it too. If I can make it, they can make it.
30-year-old Courtney Zablewski talks about being in a position of having such a rare transplant operation and how it's changed her perspective on life.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Courtney Zablewski, who on January 1st of this year received a new heart and lung. After everything you've gone through, and, you know, we started out saying heart-lung transplants. Only 17 have been done at the UW Heart Transplant Center since 1989.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel about transplants in general and about the work they did for you at the Transplant Center at UW?
It's incredible. Science is crazy. I mean, it's ever-changing and ever-growing, and I am so glad that I got to be number 17. I was really worried I wasn't going to make it. I know that the last couple before me didn't. So, again, I mean, I was prepared to not make it to the surgery. My family was prepared. We didn't think we were going to. But it would have been another teaching lesson or a learning curve for my surgeons. So it would have been good for science anyways. And I think it's incredible that we've had 17. I wish there was more, just to get it perfect so that more people can survive the surgery.
Does it make you feel, how does it make you feel that you were the 1,000th heart transplant at UW?
It's awesome. It's crazy to think that there's been 1,000. That's a lot of heart patients for one hospital. There's two hospitals in Wisconsin. So, I mean, it just puts things into perspective.
Have you ever thought, why you?
Oh, all the time. All of the time. I think, why me? Why does this happen to me? I think, why me? Why did I get these organs? Did I deserve them? I think, why me? In a ton of different aspects.
Is that one of the reasons you've decided to talk about this?
Yeah. So even before I was listed, I really thought... I voiced it to a lot of people, most of my friends, but that I'm pretty sure that my purpose in life is to push others to where they need to be. I've said that since I was, I think, 17. So having this happen and going through all of it, and now I believe you're in my 7th radio, I think, that I've talked to, or news station combined, I guess. because there's a lot of people that are afraid of organ donation, especially with new articles coming out and people pulling their donor cards. And I just think it's really important. So I think that still that purpose, that needing to push people to where they belong, whether it be to donate their organs at the end of their life, obviously, or be a living donor, that'd be great. Or also to like show people that they can make it too. If I can make it, they can make it. So I definitely still think that.
And are you still on TikTok?
I am. I don't post as often, but I try to.
When you jump out of that plane, will you?
Oh, absolutely.
Courtney Zablosky, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me here.
We've been talking with Courtney Zablosky, who on January 1st of this year received a new heart and lung at UW Health. She's only 30 years old, and already it's had quite an impact on her perspective of life. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Courtney, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.